You're listening to nativetalk.net. Audio files are available online at nativetalk.net. Be a part of the program by emailing us, podcast@nativetalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. Just one more reason not to conceive in front of the microwave. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us today on today's nativetalk.net radio program. Email, if you want to be a part of the show, is podcast@nativetalk.net. And of course, you can always make comments through our Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/nativetalk.radio. Our phone lines are also open if you want to call and leave us a voice message to be replayed here on the show. That number, of course, is 970-278-5791. And I'm sitting here in the studio. I thought I had Brandon with me, but you're not Brandon.
Well, dude, I'm your son. Of course I'm not Brandon. I'm Jason.
Jason? What happened to Brandon? Why are you here instead of him?
Oh, he probably got eaten by David the zombie.
Yeah, your little brother, he sure likes to play zombies these days, doesn't he?
Yep.
Yeah, he's always trying to be a zombie.
And all the emo and stuff that you just said was absolutely true.
I'm glad to hear that. All right, now Brandon actually called into our message line to tell us why he couldn't join us today. So let's listen in and find out why Brandon isn't here.
Yep. Hi, Native Talk listeners. This is Brandon here. Just calling to let you know, I went and visited one of those skeleton key rooms this weekend. You know, those rooms where you try to escape through a series of clues, and I think the people before me took the key, and all the lights are off, and all the employees went home, and I'm stuck here, so I can't make it this week. I'm sorry. I'll try to make it next week. Have a good time. Good luck to you, Cliff.
Okay, I don't think that Brandon is actually stuck in an escape room.
Yep.
But those things do actually sound like fun. Have you ever done an escape room before, Jason?
No, I don't know what an escape room is.
An escape room is like you go to this room and they give you like clues that you have to use to escape the traps and stuff. So Brandon claims that he's busy all weekend stuck in one of those escape rooms and he can't get out, so...
Yeah, it's a skeleton key room.
A skeleton key room. Actually, I happen to know, because I talked to Brandon before the show, he's on his way up to Washington State. He's going diving this weekend. That's the real reason why he's gone. So, but, you know, I think it's going to be fun with just me and Jason, and that is why today I wanted to start with a holiday pile. Now it is the lovely holiday season. Jason, do you like the holidays? What do you like, Jason? They can't hear you shake your head.
Yes.
It's a radio show, not television. Okay, what do you like about the holiday season? Do you like Christmas?
Yes!
What do you like about Christmas?
Presents.
Presents! And where do you get presents? Where do people get them from?
The North Pole.
Okay, that's if Santa brings you presents. But if you're not Santa, where can you get presents? Do you know?
From the store.
There we go, from the store. Now, typically, the day after Thanksgiving is known as Black Friday. Do you know what Black Friday is?
Yeah, it's where everybody buys stuff.
Yeah, everybody goes to the store and buys things. Now, Black Friday and Thanksgiving online sales in the United States have surged to record highs this year as shoppers bagged deep discounts and bought more than ever on their mobile devices, which heralds a promising start to this key holiday season, according to retail analytics firms. Now, U.S. retailers just on Black Friday raked in a record $7.9 billion in sales on Black Friday and Thanksgiving, because everybody's shopping on Thanksgiving as well these days. And that's up 18% from a year ago for online transactions. Now, a lot of people think that comes at the expense of people going to actual stores, but that's not true. Because visits to brick-and-mortar stores are about the same as last year, And at the same time, chains have tightened store inventories to ward off that post-holiday liquidation that weighs on profits. So things seem to be as good as they ever have been. And it's great because the economy's coming back, so things are looking really good these days. TVs, laptops, toys, gaming consoles like the PlayStation 4 were among the most heavily discounted and the biggest sellers, according to retail analysts. It looks like 40% of Black Friday online purchases were made on mobile phones, up from 30% last year. So people are buying more stuff. They're buying more stuff online, and that looks like a good thing. So we are smack dab right in the middle of everything. So if you haven't got your holiday shopping, now is the time to go do it. Now, of course, we did mention Thanksgiving. Did you have a good Thanksgiving, Jason?
Yeah.
What do we do for Thanksgiving?
We give thanks and we make good feasts.
What did we eat for our feast?
We make mashed potatoes, turkey, and stuffing.
Turkey? We had turkey?
Of course we do.
What? Why did we have turkey?
Because it's a big part of the feast. And also...
Did you know that your turkey used to be alive? Did you know that, really?
No.
Did you know a turkey is a bird?
It's like
a chicken. It's like a really, really big chicken.
Okay.
And every year, the president, whoever the president is, he has a pardon. Basically, there's a turkey, and he says, "We are not going to eat you on Thanksgiving." This year, President Trump pardoned Drumstick and Wishbone, and instead of winding up on somebody's dinner table, they get to go live out on a farm. So those turkeys, they're safe. But the thing that you have to remember is about 245 million turkeys get killed every year for dinner. Oh my goodness.
That's bad.
Also remember that 9 billion chickens are slaughtered each year for food. Oh, that is just horrible.
Yes.
People eating chickens and turkeys? Well, guess what? Poultry is exempt from the Federal Humane Methods of Slaughter Act, which means there are not even minimum federal standards governing how turkeys and chickens live and die. Do you think that's a problem, Jason?
Yes.
Why is that a problem?
Because turkeys should live good lives, not die and just be eaten.
Well, what would you eat if you didn't eat chickens and turkeys?
Chicken legs.
Don't you think those come from chickens as well?
Yes.
So if you can't eat chicken and turkey, what are you going to eat?
Just mashed potatoes and stuffing.
Mashed potatoes and stuffing. How about broccoli?
No.
Why not, Jason?
Get
closer to the microphone, pal.
Not in this house because I hate broccoli.
But if you can't eat meat, because did you know that steaks come from cows and pork comes from pigs? We eat animals all the time.
Yeah.
But you think that we shouldn't eat animals?
Well, I guess we should get strong. So we should get some things like bacon and
that steaks. Comes from pigs
and steak
that comes from cows
and again I don't remember
Well, a lot of people don't like the fact that we as humans and Americans or wherever you're from that we eat animals for our dinners. The vast majority of chickens live about 47 days, typically in artificially lit, windowless, barren warehouse barns. They do that so that the turkeys won't peck one another in these crowded barns, and so they cut their beaks so they're not sharp, so they can't peck each other. Does that sound like a good thing or a bad thing?
A bad thing.
Well, this is the reality behind Americans' traditional Thanksgiving meal, but there could be ways to make life and death a little bit better for the turkeys. Of course, we could eat less turkey and chicken, which that's not going to happen because we like turkeys and chicken.
Yes.
But one of the things that you could do is push the suppliers to adopt less grizzly practices. Now, that is something that, believe it or not, I don't disagree with. I don't believe that chickens and turkeys or any living thing should be held in misery just for our own pleasure. So I'm all for, you know, them to live as good a life as possible as long as they're alive. That's a good thing, right?
Yes.
I want them to be happy before they die.
Yeah.
But do you think that they should have the same rights as people?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, so what happens if I punch you? Is that, do I get in trouble if I punch you?
No, because you're a parent.
Yeah, but if I punch you for no reason, that's not okay, right?
Yes.
But, so you have rights as a human. But yep. Turkeys and chickens, they don't have what are called human rights. Yep. For example, if I kill you, where am I going?
Have no idea.
Okay.
Away?
Away where? If I kill you, murder, what happens to humans who kill other humans?
Die.
No.
Go to prison.
That's right. They go to prison. But if I kill a chicken, I'm not going to prison. Okay, so some people think that all animals should have the same rights as humans. They say things like, regardless of how these animals are raised or killed, we need to recognize that they're sentient beings who all experience pain and suffering. Now, each of these animals is an individual who wants to live freely and doesn't want to die in order to end up on somebody's plate. Yeah. As pointed out in an introduction to the principles of morals and legislation, the question is not can they reason or can they talk, but can they suffer? Maybe one day we'll all recognize that there are delicious plant-based food to satisfy our palates and no need to cause pain and suffering to billions of animals each year.
Why did you do that voice?
Because I think the person who said that is kind of a wiener. He also says, it's unfortunate that these beautiful animals, these sentient creatures, are killed so that people can eat them, not to mention the treatment and brutal slaughter of pigs, cows, fish, and other animals whose only crime is tasting good. When will we wake up and call for the end to this needless slaughter? Yeah, that's not going to happen. People are still going to eat food, and that food is going to be animals until the end of time. But I do agree that we should be treating them a little bit better.
Better.
Yeah, definitely. Here's an example of people not treating turkeys very well. Do you think turkeys can fly? They're a bird, right?
Yes.
So
they can fly.
So do you think it's a good idea to throw turkeys out of airplanes and off of buildings, like 500 feet above the ground? You think that sounds like a good thing?
No.
Well, there's an annual turkey trot in Yellville, Arkansas, which does exactly that. What they don't realize, or they don't care to realize, is domestic turkeys are bred for flightlessness. Their bodies are far too heavy for their wings to even get them off the ground. Now, their wings can slow a descent, but there's absolutely no guarantee that domestic food turkeys will survive falls from great heights. Now, the same is true of wild turkeys, who can fly, but only fly short distances. Indeed, two turkeys dropped from a plane last year died on impact. At least four turkeys this year were found injured and bleeding, although they've since found refuge at a New York shelter where they're named John, Paul, George, and Ringo, after the Beatles, of course. The town of Yellville technically stopped throwing turkeys back in 1989, but they carried on with the Turkey Trot Festival, which was started in 1946 with a dance, race, and a parade. But local pilots continue to throw turkeys, and the FAA says it does not have the authority to intervene. According to a rep, the FAA regulations do not specifically prohibit dropping live animals from aircraft, possibly because the authors of the regulation never anticipated that an explicit prohibition would be necessary. But this does not mean we endorse the practice. So what do you think about throwing turkeys out of airplanes and off of buildings, man?
Yep. Not gonna happen.
It is happening. Every single year, that's what happens. So they probably need to pass a law. Look, I'm not a big fan of the government passing too many laws. But prohibiting the throwing of live animals from out of windows of airplanes, yeah, that's not a good thing. They need to stop doing that.
Yep, so. I'll tell them, not going to happen.
Well, we'll see how that works out. All right, we got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with more stimulating Native Talk Radio right here at nativetalk.net.
For breakfast, lunch, or dinner, even a midnight snack, the NativeTalk.net radio program satisfies your appetite. Oh, excuse me. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Our House Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our House, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444. Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced.
Whoa, wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or Hard Rock History. There's nothing funny about getting up early in the morning, except the NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the program. Message line, if you want to call in and drop us a line, is 970-278-5791. Make sure you visit us online at NativeTalk.net, where you can download and listen to any of our past shows. Now, speaking of the message line.
And also they know that.
Yeah, they do know that. But Brandon is not here today. We got Jason, who's helping me do the show.
Obviously.
And Brandon, he called the message line to let us know why he's not here.
Hello, Native Talk listeners. Brandon here. I'm stuck in a crate full of bananas and spiders drifting on the Panama Canal on a ship made of garbage with stinking crabs eating it slowly. If I survive the week, I'll try to make it to the next episode, but in the meantime, I'm going to work on breaking out of here, grabbing my net, and going fishing.
Okay, thank you, Brandon, for that thrilling account of being stuck in a crate in the Panama. Did he say he's in the Panama Canal? How did you get down there, dude? All right. Now, we are a member of a Native American tribe, are we not?
No.
You're not a member of a tribe?
I am.
What tribe are you a member of?
Puyallup.
Exactly. Now, did you know that there are some, maybe some misconceptions? Things that people think about Native Americans that are not true. Three.
Not true.
What's not true?
The thing that you just said.
Okay. So, when you imagine an Indian, a Native American Indian, what do you imagine in your brain?
That I'm one of those people.
Okay, well, I'm glad you think that, because that is true. Now, when Europeans came here back in the 1500s, and they went back home and reported what they had seen, they produced fanciful depictions of the New World. Now, in the centuries that followed, captivity narratives, novels, short stories, textbooks, newspapers, art, photography, and movies perpetuated old stereotypes or even created new ones, particularly ones that cast indigenous peoples as obstacles to the creation of the modern world. Now, a lot of things that people believe, we're going to talk about the most common things that people think that are absolutely not true. Now, we know that when Christopher Columbus dubbed the diverse indigenous inhabitants of the Western Hemisphere Indians, what they did was lumped all Native Americans into this giant mass that was continued during the era of Western expansion. And so as settlers pushed into tribal territories in pursuit of new lands of the frontier, there was this conception of a Native American culture, and that's what people think. They think like teepees, bow and arrows, you know, arrowheads, war cries, war paint, you know, big headdresses. In his 1830 message to Congress, President Andrew Jackson justified forced Indian removal and ethnic cleansing by painting Indian lands as deranged savages. But it was Hollywood that established our modern vision of American Indians in blockbuster westerns like Stagecoach in 1939, Red River in 1948, and they depict all Indians all the time as horse-riding, teepee-dwelling, bow and arrow, rifle-wielding, buckskin, feather and fringe-wearing warriors. But every tribe has huge differences.
Yay, that sounds very bad. Go on, and I'm going to quickly be back.
Where are you going?
To get my water.
Okay, Brandon, Jason is going to get his water, and he'll be right back. Now, among the 567 federally recognized Indian nations which exist across the United States, well, sure, it's true that the Great Plains hunted buffalo and the Lakota lived in teepees, but hello, people like the Puyallups, which is what we are, lived in longhouses. The Navajo of the Southwest lived in hogans. The Algonquian-speaking people of the Great Lakes lived in wigwams. So, of course, there was a great diversity back then. And today, Native Americans live in normal houses, apartments, and condos, just like everybody else.
Yep.
Do we live in a teepee, Jason?
No.
Where do we live?
In houses, of course, and also in the basement.
Okay, I don't live in the basement. That's where you live. Okay. All right. The second myth is that American Indians get a free ride from the U.S. government. Now, this idea, a lot of people have brought this one up to me and say, well, you get all that free money from the government. The idea that indigenous people benefit from the government's largesse is very widespread, according to the American Indians Stereotypes and Reality by a Choctaw historian named Devin Mehusa. Staff and volunteers at Washington and New York museums hear daily about how Washington, quote-unquote, gave Native Americans their reservations, and how the Bureau of Indian Affairs manages their lives for them. If you're a regular listener of this show, you know that I am a strong proponent of Native autonomy and independence, and I think the government can just basically go straight to hell. And Native Americans, like everyone, are subject to income taxes and at best have the same access to government services, although in often cases it's worse. Now, back in 2013, Indian Health Services spent about $2,800 per capita for patient health services, well below the national average of $7,800.
$7,000?
Yeah, so they're spending far less on Native American health than they are normal people's health. And Indian Health Service clinics can be incredibly difficult to get to, not just on reservations, but in urban areas where the majority of Native Americans live today. We live up in Fort Collins, Colorado. The closest Native American health clinic is in Denver. That means I got to drive all the way down there just to be seen at a clinic, and they don't do dentistry. They don't do eye care. They don't do hospital care. They don't do almost anything. So I'm kind of stuck doing regular health care like everyone else, you know?
Okay.
Heaven forbid I'm... Worms. What's that, Jason?
And defeat the worms or you have to go to another clinic away from them for forever.
Yeah, that would be a bad thing.
Yep.
So people who believe that that Indians get a free ride from the government is not only wrong, it's ridiculous. Those reservations, by the way, were created when tribes relinquished gigantic portion of their original land holdings in treaties with the federal government. They made government-to-government agreements because they were warring with each other. And that's all that remained after they stole giant pieces of land from Native Americans. So, and what happened there? They go, oh, you're sitting on gold. We want that land. And they'd kick them off again. So if you hear anyone spouting off about how, you know, you get a free ride from the government, point out to them that the Indians were here first. And if anything, the government owes them a hell of a lot more than they've given them over the last several hundred of years. Now, another one, and this one I heard way back when I was in school, that the Indians up in New York State sold Manhattan Island for about $24 worth of trinkets and beads. Now, this myth, which is repeated in textbooks and made vivid in many illustrations, casts Native Americans as gullible provincials who traded valuable lands and beaver pelts for colorful European-made beads and baubles.
What?
Well, so the belief there is that the Indians who lived up in New York State, they traded Manhattan. You've been to New York City before, right?
Yeah, but it was a very long time ago that I didn't even remember what the United States building looks like.
The Empire State Building. Yeah, you were about 2 years old at the time.
Yep.
But you know it's a big city, right?
Of course. It was called New York City.
They're called the Empire State.
Yep.
That's what the whole state of New York is known as.
Yep.
And just trillions, trillions and trillions of dollars worth of value in land alone, let alone how much is done there in commerce and business, and it's the headquarters of so much. And they supposedly traded it for just a few little things that were worth about $24. But the truth of the matter is, it's extremely unlikely that the Lenape Indians saw the original transaction as a sale at all. Because at the time, land could be designated for the exclusive use of certain individuals and their families. But the idea of selling land in perpetuity to be regarded as property was something that was absolutely foreign to Native societies. So they go like, oh, yeah, you can use it for a while. And so they took payment for that. But the idea that they were like selling their land forever, they had no idea what they were doing, all right, or what it was all about.
Okay.
So did you have something to say, Jason?
Yeah. A couple of minutes ago, I thought you said Home Alone.
Yeah, I was talking about New York City, and that would be Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, but we didn't actually bring that movie up, but I'm glad you did. So.
Yep.
All right, anyways. Historians who now try to reconstruct early transactions between Europeans and Native Americans differ in their opinions over whether the Lenape considered it an agreement for the Dutch to use but not own, or whether, even as early as 1626, Indians had engaged in enough trade to understand European economic ideas at all. And our last myth is that mascots honor Native Americans. Now, this is a different issue from the idea that Native mascots are offensive.
And basketball.
I am not personally offended by Native American mascots such as the football team, the Redskins. Kind of find the Chief Wahoo on the Cleveland Indians, that's pretty offensive. But most of the time, I don't. And that holds true for universities and schools who have the Indians as mascot. Even here in Loveland, Colorado, the Loveland High School, their mascot is the Indians. I don't find that offensive, but if you try to say that they're honoring Native Americans, which is what Dan Snyder says the Washington Redskins represents. They say it represents honor, respect, and pride. Now, the use of Native American mascots arose during the allotment period, which was a period of time when U.S. policy sought to eradicate Native sovereignty, and Wild West shows cemented the image of Indians as Plains warriors, which is why all of those mascots resemble Plains Indians, even when they represent Washington, Florida, and Ohio teams.
Wow.
So, it doesn't honor the natives at all. It's just exposure to these stereotypes, and it actually results in a negative impact on Native American Indian young people.
Wow, that's not real great.
What?
I said, what? I thought we were great.
Well, they don't necessarily have to be bad, but if you truly want to honor Native Americans with your sports teams, then you need to partner with existing tribes and honor that culture, kind of actually push something out there that is positive. You know what I'm saying?
Dot net.
All right, Jason. That is our show. Hopefully, we can... We can correct stereotypes that are out there and help people see natives in positive lights. As always, thank you for listening. That'll do it for us today. But we'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. Check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/Native Talk Radio. Have a great day.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.
And also, don't eat turkeys on Thanksgiving anymore.
Well, maybe just not ones that were mistreated, huh?
Yes!
All right, buddy. We'll see you next week.
Yes, Sid.
Always remember, animals are your friends, but they still won't pick you up at the airport.
The NativeTalk.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.